to the blessed, noble, perfectly awakened one. Homage to the blessed, noble, and perfectly awakened one. Homage to the blessed, noble, and perfectly awakened one. So now is the opportunity to set one's heart on listening to the noble Dhamma, the teachings of the fully self-awakened Buddha. We see that the teachings of the fully self-awakened Buddha, it's not something that's easy to listen to, because we see the Buddha as the founder of the Buddhasasana. He built his spiritual perfections, his parami, for a very long time. These spiritual perfections of generosity, virtue, collectedness, wisdom, loving kindness, equanimity, patient endurance, energy and effort, truthfulness, renunciation, for example. He built these until they were complete and full. And for ourselves, we come to sit meditation, to gather our minds like this, to train and practice, to bring the mind to peace. And it's not easy for this occasion to arise. We see the fully self-awakened Buddha needed to train in mindfulness until it was firm and concentrated, until samadhi was firm and concentrated to the level of deep absorption and psychic power, very high levels of samadhi. And patient endurance, the Buddha built until it was very high level of patient endurance, of kanti, to the point of sacrificing his very flesh. And even when it came to that point, he still praised the living of the holy life, the renunciate life. So this is true patient endurance to the point where he lost his life. So we see the Buddha didn't fear death. And we see who else is capable of doing this. The Lord Buddha had great power and energy from jhana, from deep samadhi, to the point where he could give his flesh and bones, endure great amounts of vedana, of feeling, and still he praised patient endurance. So we see in some lifetimes the Buddha sacrificed his life, built parami to the point of giving up his own life. And the quality of effort, the patient, or the spiritual virtue of effort and energy, practiced to the point of giving up his life as well, to realize the state of full parami, or full spiritual virtues, in order to realize perfect self-awakening as a Buddha in his last life. And in his last life, the Lord Buddha still tortured himself to the point where he passed out 3 times. If any other human tried to do this, they would die. But we see that the strength of the Buddha's parami, of his spiritual virtues, was incredibly great, very high level, where he didn't die, because in that life he must attain to full self-awakening. And having attained already, the Buddha had the loving kindness to then teach the Dhamma. So we study the Dhamma that the Buddha taught. And the Buddha, we see, had this immense intelligence. We can compare it like ourselves being like a speck of dust in space. So he had the mindfulness and wisdom to teach things in all their complexity and great refined subtlety, to come teach in this way. So when we speak of ourselves, for us Buddhist practitioners, we have a great deal of merit. We have respect and faith in the Buddha, in the Dhamma, And then the Buddha taught to give rise to the Sangha in the Buddha Sasana, those who are able to know following the Buddha. This is the arising of the noble ones, the Arya Pugala, whether it's a stream enterer, Sotapanna, once returner, Sakadagami, non-returner, Anagami, or fully self-awakened, fully enlightened Arahant. So from the Buddha's time until now, we have, for instance, Venerable Ajahn Mun, Venerable Ajahn Chah, these great masters and teachers, what we call the mother, father, great teachers, a great many Arahants from that time until the present. And these great masters, they practiced the teachings they received and then passed on those teachings to us. And some teachings, they're simple but very profound. They're deathless. For instance, the teaching on letting go. Sometimes we have something that feels quite heavy in life. Venerable Ajahn Chah taught that however heavy or important we feel it is, letting go is more important. And sometimes we lose the things that we love, perhaps an animal that we care for, that we have some closeness to or attachment to, we care for our person and our family and so on. And we experience loss. And however, whatever kind of loss it is, we practice to care for the mind, that we lose external things, but we practice not to lose our heart. So this is the teaching of Venerable Ajahn Chah that's deep and profound. So we practice and we keep practicing. If we're not able to do it, then it just means we need to train and practice the mind more to bring it to goodness. We speak to this mind, the citta. The citta is bright, is mind that's still in samadhi, is clear. And this mind in that state, deeper down, the kilesa, the defilement, are still there, lying on the bottom, settled on the bottom. We call these latent tendencies, these anusaya defilements are still there. And so when a sense impression contacts the mind receives that impression, and the kilesas arise right there. If the mind is actually pure in truth, then there's none of these latent defilements. So whatever sense impression or mood contacts the mind, then no kilesas arise in the mind. In this case, we compare it to like a water bead on a lotus leaf. The water doesn't enter the leaf no matter what you do. The moods and sense impressions don't make the mind low and sad. So we see that the bright mind is like clear water in a pool. At the bottom, there is sediment. So if we shake up the water or stir it, then the sediment rises up. So we need to train the mind to be still, to be bright with collectedness, with samadhi. So we train in mindfulness and samadhi to make the mind firmly established, give rise to stability of mind in order to see clearly the sediment in the mind. And so once, when the mind has samadhi, then we're able to contemplate. You see some individuals, practitioners, who train the mind, and the mind becomes bright, the body and mind feel light, happy and at ease. And then this mind is able to do the work of contemplation. And so in this state, it's important to bring the body up as the object of mind. Some practitioners, they've practiced, brought about samadhi and collectedness, and this gives rise to some belief in oneself. And the kilesas in the mind say that they want to realize quickly, want to attain quickly. And so these latent defilements in the mind, they want arahantship quickly, they want to attain as quickly as possible. And so in this state, the practitioner might think that contemplating or thinking of the body, it's such a coarse object. Your mind is peaceful in samadhi, the body and mind feel light. One may feel that one can't contemplate the body, one can just contemplate the mind to attain to the Dhamma. Because there's enough mindfulness in the mind that when the mind starts to proliferate, the mind knows it as it arises, and the proliferation then ceases. And so one might think that the strength of mind is sufficient to attain Dhamma through contemplating, seeing the mind is just the mind. It's not a being, not a me or mine or self. If one thinks like this, then one needs to be careful before one is like a child, has this faith in the great teacher, but then one grows up a bit and starts to believe in oneself. And so in the meditation lineage, it's taught to respect the teacher, to respect the great teacher. And then the teacher, and we practice, and then the great teacher teaches us. If we get stuck in samadhi, then the teacher teaches us not to be stuck, or how not to be stuck in samadhi. If we get lost on the way, we lose track of the path. And then the teacher helps us get back on the path. Some get lost in outside paths. And so the teacher helps bring us back. Some practitioners get lost having this experience of samadhi, this fullness and coolness of heart. And this can go on continuously for a month or a whole year. And such a practitioner might think that it's the paths and fruits and nibbana. So one can get deluded in this. So this is a brightness arising, and one has belief in oneself. But then the great teacher comes and tells us that this is not the way. One needs to use the samadhi that one has to contemplate the body, to see it as impermanent, stressful, and not self. We see in this state that it's still possible for thoughts to make the mind low and sad. The brightness can become sadness because there's still attachment and clinging to the body. This body, a heap of natural elements of earth, air, fire, and water. And there's delusion with regard to that, this misconceiving, misapprehension of the body, seeing it in the wrong way. Because in truth, the body is not beautiful. But the defilements teach the mind that the body is beautiful. And we can reflect, well, if the body is actually beautiful in truth, then why do we need to brush the teeth and wash the hair, wash the face, wash the skin, wash our clothing? For instance, if we take some cloth and clean it, then we can store it for 7 days or 2 weeks or a month. And if it's a good storage space without dust, then we can still use it after a whole month or so. But we see if we take that cloth and touch it to the body, it's already dirty after just 1 day, and we don't want to use it again. This is something that the Sangha contemplate all the time, that the robe is not unclean, it's not dirty to begin with, but having touched this foul body, this dirty or putrid body, then it gets sweat, bacteria, little animals that are little beings that live in unclean places, and the cloth becomes dirty. So this is an example. So you see that this quality of delusion, this mind that's distorted, misconceiving things, taking this body that's a heap of instability, stress, and ownerlessness. But the defilements teach us that the body is stable, a source of pleasure, because we use the body to receive objects of sight, sound, taste, smell, touch, that we like, that we desire. But then we also receive a great deal of things that we don't like. Sometimes it's too hot, sometimes it's too cold. The body changes, and that's stressful or painful. If we sit for too long, then it's dukkha, it's painful. If we lie down for too long, if we lie down without moving, then that becomes stressful. So we see that these postures are covering up the quality of stress and dukkha. As we sit for a bit, then we stand, then we walk, then we lie down, keep changing the postures of the body. In that way, we don't see the suffering in the body. But if we only use one posture, then we see suffering, we see stress. We can also look at the quality of impermanence, anicchang, instability. Why is it unstable? So we see the breath comes in, stays for a little while, and goes out. If the breath doesn't come in again, then we die right there. So we see that if the breathing stops, then the body dies right there. And if we breathe in and it's not a full in-breath, then we feel uncomfortable or ill at ease. If our oxygen levels are just at 70%, then it's difficult for us to live like that. If the body has less than 90% oxygen, it's uncomfortable, it's difficult, can lead to death. So we see that the body is able to live because of this in and out breathing. But we don't see this because the breath is always going in and out, in and out. So if the breath goes in, it doesn't come out, or if the breath goes out, it doesn't come in, then the body dies right there. So we see that it's impermanent. We also reflect on the body as a heap of natural elements gathered together, like an automaton or a robot. We see that this quality of delusion arises very quickly with regard to this. So we contemplate it to bring the mind to collectedness. We contemplate the body to reduce the liking and attraction towards it. So we contemplate like this, see the body as a heap of earth, air, fire, and water. And so in the beginning, how do we contemplate this? Well, initially we start with the level of thought and perception and memory. We look at the body as a heap of natural elements of earth, air, fire, and water gathered together. They fall apart, degrade, disintegrate, they're not self, not a me or mine. One way we can think of this is, for instance, taking a cow, and if one cuts up the cow to separate out the bones, the skin, the flesh and blood, separating it out into piles of each of the four elements of earth, air, fire, and water, into four piles. So that's the kind of feeling that you need to cultivate with this. It's something that all of us are capable of doing. We can do it on the computer, for instance. We separate out these elements. until they're subtler and subtler, more and more refined. And we see that they're truly not self, not me or mine in truth. We separate out these elements until they're protons, electrons, and neutrons. And then we go even more subtle than that. And we see that there's really nothing there. It's just empty. But when we gather it together, we feel that there's a self there. We feel that it's me or mine. So we see that this quality of gathering things together covers over the quality of not self. So we use sanya, memory and perception, to contemplate, to bring the mind to samadhi, to see that all things and the body are empty, all materiality and mentality are empty. So these elements, or sorry, the knowing element, that which knows, we think that it's self, but even that we don't cling to as me or mine, as self. When all materiality and mentality are all gone, it's just the knowing element there. But when ignorance arises, then it clings to that knowing element as self. But the knowing element without ignorance, there's no self there, no me or mine. So we build up wisdom, cultivate discernment, cultivate the one who knows to watch over the mind. So this knowing element to know, that knows all the various sense impressions that arise. And we need to have the one who knows to teach it, to teach the mind. So this is what we call magga, the path of sila, samadhi, panya, that teaches the mind. The path that teaches the mind not to cling. When the path of sila, samadhi, panya has more strength and energy, then it's able to teach the mind. But when the path of sila, samadhi, panya lacks energy, then it can't teach the mind. So in that case, well, what do we do then? We have to patiently endure, to have virtue, or sila, this quality of sila, which is very important. In the beginning, we have the 5 precepts, sometimes the 8 precepts. And so we fight, we endure, we have patient endurance. Sometimes the mind's peaceful, sometimes it's not, but never mind about that. See the drawbacks of the agitated mind and seek out the peaceful and collected mind in order to realize wisdom. This is something you're able to do all the time. And you practice to listen to the Dhamma, to dispel the doubts in the mind, to subdue the doubts. And sometimes the mind will proliferate and these kilesas arise. We call kilesa mara, and also sankara mara, the mara of conditioned formations. And sometimes we want to go respect a sacred site or sacred object, but the defilements don't want to pay respects. The defilements want to build up obstacles so that we're not able to pay respects. We see that we also have a fear of demerit or fear of unwholesomeness. And so the mind will proliferate, and this becomes an obstruction as well. Because we see that these defilements, they're an old friend of the mind. They've been an old friend of the mind for a very long time. The mind's been associated and friendly with the defilements for such a long time. So the defilements would say, oh, so you want me to be gone now? And so the defilements create obstacles and obstructions and can bring up imagery in the mind as well, can bring up visions in the mind. Sometimes we have a fear of falling into hell, and we think about various things, and the mind can proliferate in various ways. And so a practitioner going through this kind of experience, it's a period of torture. The mind fears unwholesomeness. And before, the mind didn't know about demerit. But then one starts to think in demeritorious ways and fears that demerit. This can be a hiri or otapa, a fear of, or the mind that shrinks from wrongdoing, fears the consequences of wrongdoing. These are qualities of heavenly beings, of devas. But ignorance proliferates in the mind, creates obstructions to such a degree that the breath doesn't flow easily anymore. Like asthma, the breath isn't exiting the body, feels tight and constrained. And this is where the energy of the mind is not good, and so the energy of the body isn't good either. The breath is constricted, not spacious. There might be insufficient oxygen. The mind's not peaceful, and the defilements are proliferating. And the mind still clings to things as self, because there's still a sense of self there. It's the self who's thinking, the self who's remembering. And so this creates a torturous experience. We want to recollect good things, think of only good things. But the mind has various proliferations like jealousy, ill will, wishing to harm, lacking compassion, or a lack of equanimity with regard to others doing unwholesome things. So right there is where we need to train in the four Brahmaviharas of loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity. Whatever we're thinking about, just watch it, listen to the Dhamma. Whatever unwholesome or demeritorious thoughts or objects arise in the mind, just discard them. And this way the mind can become bright like before. So we have mindfulness well established with the mind. We contemplate to bring the mind to peace and samadhi. And once the mind's peaceful like this, then we contemplate the body is not beautiful as a heap of the four elements. So we do this, we keep a watch over the mind throughout the day, reciting our meditation word. We teach the mind, train the mind to become peaceful. In this way, when we do this throughout the day, we come to sit meditation, samadhi arises more easily. If we just let the mind do whatever it wants throughout the day, then this doesn't work. The mind just goes into liking and disliking. When we come to sit in meditation in the evening, we're not able to do it. So however it is, we are able to do this practice. For myself, I was sitting meditation. The mind became peaceful and empty. I was about 17 or 18 years old at that time. Felt very much at ease. Then after that, I became lost and didn't meditate for a period. Then a great deal of moods and sense impressions came into the mind. And then I came to sit meditation again. The body felt very light. But then after that, I became lost again and came back to meditate again. I sat and closed my eyes and I thought, well, why isn't the mind stopping? It's like the mind just keeps going out like that. It felt like the mind was very hot, like it was on fire. felt very hot in the mind. I looked at that feeling and I thought, well, why did the mind feel cool before? I saw that I hadn't been watching my mind. So sitting meditation like that, 5 minutes, felt like an hour. One needs to patiently endure with that and keep practicing often. And then when the mind gathers in samadhi, then sitting for 1 hour can feel like not long at all. So therefore we see that we have to cultivate our spiritual virtues of virtue, generosity, patient endurance, to train and practice, to have effort and perseverance. So we see that many have come gathered together having interest in Dhamma. So I rejoice, Anumodana, with all of you. May you set your hearts on the practice in this life to be able to see the body as impermanent, stressful, and not self. To see the Dhamma, to be able to see the Buddha. In this way, there will be no eighth birth, no eighth life. So may you all set your hearts on this.